Tonight, our learning is sponsored by Elaine Fried in memory of her mother, Chaya Bas Yitzchak Zechorna Levracha, by Shlomo Fried in memory of his father, Avram and Asher Zelig Zechorna Levracha, by Michael Levin in memory of his grandmother, Bracha Bas Mordechai Zechorna Levracha, and by Dan and Jamie Schwartz in memory of Dan's mother, Rachel Bas Feivel Zechorna Levracha. We started last week the sugya of Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurim, and we really summed up a lot of what we were doing. We set up a lot of questions over the course of this year, really summed it up towards the very end, and there were a number of requests to kind of unpack what we did at the very end of this year. So we're going to try to go over that again, and we will see that hopefully the conceptual analysis that we engaged in at the end of last week's year will hopefully be relevant, if we're going to be ambitious, will be relevant perhaps to our analysis tonight as well. So we'll get into that in due time, but let's start with the first sheet that I distributed, which is the same as the sheet that we did last week. So last week, we went through the Shakla V'Tarya of Gittin Daf Beis Amud Beis through most of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. We went through almost an entire Daf of Gemara, and we looked at a Tosfos. The topic of the Gemara was Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurim. The Gemara suggested that when a shliach delivers a get and says b'fanei nachtam, effectively declaring the get to be kosher, maybe the reason we believe him is because of a principle of Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurim. Just like when a Shabbos guest comes over and I tell them that the food I'm serving them is kosher, they have a right to believe me. Maybe we have a right to believe the shliach when he asserts that the get is kosher. And the Gemara rejected that for two reasons. It said that a get is both ischazik isura, that she is in a category of Isur status. It's not like a piece of meat where the status is a question mark. It's a 50-50 a possibility of kosher or treif, and somebody comes and says it's kosher. She has an Isur Eishas Ish. She's prohibited to Kuli Alma, and now we're trying to declare that she's Muteras the Kuli Alma. We're trying to reverse her status of prohibition. So that's one reason the Gemara gave for why Eidecha Nema Bisurim doesn't work. And two, the Gemara said it's also a Davar Sheva Erva. Now again, are those the same thing or different things? We might get into that, not tonight, but at some point we may get into that. But that was what the Gemara said. Tosos then pointed out, that even in cases, so let's just take a step back. So ordinarily speaking, if you have something of a category of Isur, it's not a debate of mammon, it's not a monetary dispute, it's not a question of what we would call nefashos, so you're not trying to condemn somebody to death or to corporal punishment, just a question of whether the meat is kosher or treif, we believe one witness. Step one. Step two, if it's a schazik isura, if we have some kind of running assumption that the meat is treif, that the woman is prohibited to kuli alma, then an eid echad is not ne'eman, then he loses his ne'emanus. Step three, Tosu said there can be one additional factor that comes in and saves the eid echad's ne'emanus. It comes in, it swoops in, and restores the ne'emanus of this one eid, enables us to believe him once again. What is that? That is the category of biyado. If it's biyado latakein, if he has the ability to correct whatever problem exists, then we give him ne'emanus, even though it is a schazek yisura. The example that we had in Tosos was afreshes truma. You have produce that's grown in Eretz Yisrael. It has a natural status called tevel. It is prohibited to eat in its natural harvested state. But once you separate truma, then it is permitted. So what if you have an eid echad who comes along and says, this produce, by the way, I already separated truma from that produce. Now we should say he's actually not believed. Why? It's chazek yisura. It started in a status of definite prohibition, and now he's trying to eliminate that prohibition. He's trying to mitigate the prohibition. He's trying to make it permitted. So we should have said he's not believed because of his chazik isura. But no, we have a principle of biyado. Because it's very easy for him to actually fix it, he could just take away some of the afreshes truma. We grant him ne'amanos, and we say he is believed, even though it is his chazik isura, even though we know it was prohibited beforehand. Sorry, was there a question? No, that was from back there. Okay, good. That was biyado. That was the background to the Tosos that we saw. Now, we saw three pieces of analysis of this concept of biyado that appeared in Tosos. And this is what I want to return to. We're going to revisit this. And then, like I said, we'll jump into our new sources and our new source sheet and further explore the sugya of Eid Echad Ne'eman Be'isurim. So take a look at the source sheet from last week at number three, where the English outline, where I outlined some of the issues here. So one question that we had that was really the starting point of Tosos was a debate between Rashi and Tosos regarding Hafreshas Truma. We just gave Hafreshas Truma as an example where we do believe in Eid Echad. but not exactly a standard case of where we believe in Eid Echad. We believe in Eid Echad here because even though it's not just a standard case where we believe him, he has a demerit against him because of his Chazik Isura, because it was originally Tevel, and he has that second factor of Biyada, which boosts his Ne'emanus and enables him to overcome and surmount that obstacle of his Chazik Isura. So when you have that case where we do believe him, but we have those two additional factors, one against him and one for him, how do we view such a case? Rashi, if you look at source number 3.1, Rashi considered this an example of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. Is Afreshas Truma an example of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim? Rashi says yes. He includes it on his list as an example of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. When he gives several examples, Shechita, Nikur Hagid, etc., he says one example of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim is this case of Afreshas Truma. Yes, it's a little bit of a strange case, right? Because again, he has the Eschazik Isura factor working against him. He has this Biyado overcoming that Eschazik Isura and boosting his Eidos. So it's not a standard case like other cases where we just believe him and we don't have any of those additional factors at play. But nonetheless, when all is said and done, do we believe him? Yes, we do. And therefore, Rashi says that is an example of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. Tosfos said no. That's not Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. It's an instance of his Chazik Yisura with Biyada. You can't compare it to an ordinary case of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. We have a piece of meat and nobody knows if it's kosher or treif, and somebody says kosher. That's Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. There's no factor against him. There's no additional factor for him. It's just belief. We believe what he says because he testifies that the meat is kosher, or alternately, the meat is not kosher. Here, we have additional factors at play. We have his Chazik Isura militating against him. We have Biyado boosting him in order to overcome that obstacle of his Chazik Isura. That cannot be considered an instance of Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isura. That was the first debate that we had between Rashi and Tosfos. Next, we saw another question of why Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurim applies to Zayin Nekiyim by Nida. Tosfos asserted that another instance of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim is a woman's count of Zayin Nekiyim. When a Nida wants to go to the mikvah, she needs to count and make sure that she has 7 clean days before she goes to the mikvah. Nowadays, we observe that across the board. In any instance of Riyas Dam, we require Zayin Nekiyim. But on a Del Reisa level, it was required in certain instances as well. So she needs to count those Zayin Nekiyim before she goes to the mikvah. Who's asserting that she had Zayin Nekiyim? Who's testifying? Are we bringing two witnesses that were Zayin Nekiyim? Obviously not. You're trusting the count of the Isha herself. So Tosfos said that was an instance of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim. But then Tosfos posed an obvious question. Source 3.2. Why does Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim apply to Zayin Nekiyim by Nida? Why isn't it Eschazek Isura? She was in a definite prohibited status to her husband. The moment that she had that Re'iyas Dam, the moment that she became a Nida, she's definitely prohibited to her husband. And we just said that an Eid Echad cannot overcome a definite Isur state in order to create Heter. So why is she believed to say Eda? Why is she believed in this instance of counting the Zayin Nekiyim? And Tosfos offered two answers. Number one, Tosfos said, it's not real Eschazek Isura, because we know that she will soon be Tehora. Eschazek Isura means that there is Isur status imbued in this Cheftza. That it is, in theory, if unacted upon, for perpetuity, it will be in a state of Isur. When it comes to Isha Nida, we know that there's a natural biological cycle that determines a natural halachic cycle pertaining to her Isur or Heter status. So it's not real Eschazek Isura because we expect that the natural expectation is that at a certain point she'll be Choseres le Hetera. She'll return to her original Heter status. That's one reason why Tosfos gave for not Eschazek Isura. What was the second answer that Tosfos gave? It is Biyada. That was the first answer. The first answer was encyclical. The second answer is it is Biyada, because she can go to the mikvah. So we have these two answers in Tosfos as to why there's no Eschazek Isura by Nida and why she is believed. Another important piece.
I mean, she's claiming that I'm Tahar, not that. In other words, you're relying on her to say that I'm no longer seeing blood, not that she's going to the mikvah. So what is Biyada in that situation?
Biyada to remove the Cheskas Isur because she can go to the mikvah. In other words, there's a correction to the Isur, the Cheskas Isur. In other words, just like, let's say, by Tevel, right? If unacted upon, it's always Usur, but it's Biyadcha to fix it. So by Ishto Nida as well, even though she has a Cheskas Isur of Nida, there is a fix for it. She can, in theory, go to the mikvah and correct that Isur status. So because there is a fix for it, that's why it's Biyada, and therefore the Isur status is not considered entrenched like an ordinary Cheskas Isur because there's a fix that she can do.
So it's not the fact that you said I stopped seeing blood?
No.
I can go to... I'm going to the mikvah then.
Is what impacts the cheskas iser. That's the key. Right. That's what changes the cheskas iser. Fine. So, and then we saw one further concept. We're not even going to get into point three at this very moment. We'll get into it soon. But those are two critical pieces that we saw in Tosfos. Now, returning to number one, the question that I left you at the very end, and I posed to you again, if you remember, great. If not, even better. It's a fresh opportunity to think about it. Is what is this machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos? Rashi says that you have a principle of Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. It applies when someone takes an unidentified piece of meat and testifies that it's kosher or treif. It also applies in an instance where you have a Schazik Yisura plus the boost of Biyado. That's also Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. Tosfos say, what are you talking about? That's not Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. That's a totally separate principle. Those are totally separate factors at play. That's a case where you had Biyado. That's not Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. So what exactly is the machlokas here? Both Rashi and Tosfos agree that the person is believed. Both agree that if he says, I separated Truma, he's believed to indeed have claimed that he separated Truma. So what exactly are they arguing about? That was the question that we left with at the very end of last week. And I pose it to you again now. What exactly are they arguing about? Again, it could be fresh analysis or just recall from what we did last week. Yeah, go ahead, Ari.
I think we started this last week.
We did.
Arguing about the concept of the other.
Namely,
if it's, does is Chazek Asura plus Biyado make it mutter for Eidecha Nemen Bisurim, or is Biyado a separate concept altogether?
Exactly, right. So that's exactly the analysis that we started outlining last time. How do we view this concept of Biyado? We have a general principle of Eidecha Nemen Bisurim, and now we have a case where there's a minus against it, Chazek Isura, and a plus of Biyado. So what happens when you have that plus and minus? There are two ways in which we can view it. One option is, once you have Chazek Isura, once you have that first minus, that wipes out Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. And there's no more to be said about Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. That principle is done. It's finished. Chazek Isura eliminates it entirely. But, fortunately, you have a new factor called Biyado, which introduces a new form of Ne'emanus, such that you can be believed, even though you don't have the avenue of Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. That is one approach to this principle of Biyado. Alternately, we can say that Biyado is not a new form of Ne'emanus. What does it do? It is a way of restoring Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. It's a way of boosting Eidecha Nemen Bisurim such that even though you have the demerit against you, when you have the minus of Chazek Isura and the plus of Biyado, they neutralize each other, and then Eidecha Nemen Bisurim applies. Even that can really be formulated in different ways. One way to formulate it is Biyado boosts the Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. The Eidecha Nemen Bisurim faces an impediment of Chazek Isura, and the Biyado kind of gives it the extra push to get over that obstacle, to get over that barrier of Chazek Isura. That's one way of viewing it. I think there's an alternative way of viewing it that's even more compelling, that's even better. What's an alternate way you can formulate this in terms of preserving Eidecha Nemen Bisurim?
Biyado is a form of Eidecha Nemen, right? Because he's doing it himself. You're taking it.
So we're not saying that you're doing it. We're saying that because you can do it, you're believed, is what we're saying. So, but I think Biyado is not Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. I think it might do something else. Biyado
trumps it as its own form of Ne'emanus.
That was option one. Now I'm offering a second approach that it enhances Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. But I'm saying even that can be formulated in two ways. Let's call them 2A and 2B. 2A is that Biyado gives an extra boost to Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. 2B... it neutralizes the Eschazek Isura. Exactly. In other words, it's not that it boosts Eidecha Nemen Bisurim so it can overcome Eschazek Isura. Eschazek Isura means that something is really entrenched in its prohibition status. Now, if it's very easy for me to fix it, do we really say it's entrenched in its prohibition status? No, it's not. Biyado comes and neutralizes Eschazek Isura such that we go back to the original Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. That's the purest form of Biyado preserving Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. It's not that it boosts it, it's not that it enhances it. It just eliminates the impediment such that we go back to the original Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. Now, returning to Rashi and Tosfos, now again, the 2A, 2B, that nuance we can leave aside for now. I think it's a valuable nuance, but we can put that aside. Returning to Rashi and Tosfos, it is likely that is precisely the machlokas that we are dealing with. Rashi says that Biyado, the Afrashas Truma case, is an example of Eidecha Nemen Bisurim. Why? Because Biyado is not an alternate, separate avenue of Ne'eman. It's not a separate avenue through which we believe someone. It is a way of preserving Eidecha Nemen Bisurim when Eidachanem Bisurim comes up against the obstacle of Eschazek Yisura. That's the approach of Rashi. Tosfos are saying, no, that's not what Biyado is. That's not a case of Eidachanem Bisurim at all. Once you face Eschazek Yisura, Eidachanem Bisurim is eliminated. Biyado is a totally new avenue of the Emanos that jumps in and saves you, but has nothing to do with the original Eidachanem Bisurim that has permanently been eliminated in this case of Eschazek Yisura. That is likely the machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos.
What was the basis of Tosfos' explanation that Biyado was a new form or additional form of Nemanos?
That's how they understand the notion of Biyado. Now, what exactly is Biyado?
Is it an
so there are different formulations of the Echronim as to what exactly it could be. There are areas where we have Ne'emanos on something, even outside of the realm of strict Eidos. And we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here because it's going to be very important to our analysis going forward. But let me just give you one example. One example that comes up in the fourth parak of Maseches Kiddushin. A large part of the last parak of Maseches Kiddushin is about Yuchsin, is about Yichus. And the Gemara says that there are certain people who are believed to testify to certain yichus issues, right? Let's say, for example, who is the oldest child in a family? Who is the bechor in a family, right? So the Gemara says that the midwife has ne'emanus to testify which child is born first, right? The mother has ne'emanus to testify. The father has ne'emanus to testify in different instances as to which child is born first. Now, what avenue of ne'emanus is that? So it's not entirely clear, and that's part of the discussion in the conceptual analysis, if we were learning the fourth parak of Maseches Kiddushin. But it could be a form of Eidos. Alternately, it could be a form of what we call Ne'emanos. There are certain instances where we believe people to ascertain or to assert that something is true, even though they don't fit the formal categories of Eidos, where we believe them. In that instance, okay, right, so, right, exactly. So there could be lots of forms of ne'emanos, right? A taina with a migo, right? Or a chazaka, or a rove. There are lots of avenues of ne'emanos that exist outside of strict eidos. In that instance, we might call it a form of bailos, is the language that some of the achronim use. Like, you are the bailim on this familial situation. You are the one who's most intimately familiar with it. You are the one who, I guess, in a certain halachic sense, has oversight of the halachic status of the family members, and therefore we grant you ne'emanos. One might say biyado does something similar. You are the one who's in control of the situation, so we grant you a form of ne'emanos. Whatever it is, and again, it's a very valid question, and it is discussed by the achronim, but like, again, I remember that bailos formulation being used. There are other formulations too. Whatever it may be, I think migo is also a formulation that's used. Zach is pointing out it's migo, right? Migo that I could have just done it myself. Believe me when I say that it's separated. So whatever it is, there's going to be that ne'emanos there according to Tosos. But it's separate from Eidachanem and Bisurim. Now the truth is, that whole question could be at play within Tosos itself in point number two. Remember, Tosos there said that the source for Eidachanem and Bisurim is v'safra la by nida. The Torah grants ne'emanos to a woman to engage her count of Zayin Nekiyim. Now Tosfos, they definitely use that as their source for Eidach HaNe'emon Bisurim. But Tosfos themselves consider the possibility that that's not a standard case of Eidach HaNe'emon Bisurim, but rather a case of what? Look at source 3, point 2, bullet 2, right? Why do Tosfos say that she's believed in that case, according to one daya? Because it is Biyada to go to the mikvah, which means that you have one daya in Tosos that considers the possibility that the entire source for the principle of Eidach HaNe'emon Bisurim b'chol Torah Kula is what case? Is a case of Eschazek Yisura plus Biyada. If you want to make that assertion and claim that that case is the source, is the paradigm of Eidach HaNe'emon Bisurim b'chol Torah Kula, then you had better certainly hope that that is at least a form of Eidach HaNe'emon Bisurim, as opposed to an outside form of ne'emanos that comes to sweep in. If you would adopt the view that biyada is totally separate, like Tosfos did in point number one, then you'd never be able to use that as the source for Eidach HaNe'emon Bisurim. Tosfos offered another way, and again, source 3, point 2, bullet 1, they offered another way that you could preserve nida. They said, no, you know what, maybe it's not really Eschazek Yisura, it's not biyada, but because of her natural cycle, there was no Cheskas Yisur to begin with. If you adopt that approach, then this is a standard case of Eidach HaNe'emon Bi'isurim, and then you could claim that Biyada is a separate avenue. But certainly within that second view of Tosos, again, source 3, point 2, bullet 2, they're maintaining that Biyada is the paradigm and source for Eidach HaNe'emon Bi'isurim B'chol Torah Kula. Clearly, that is another example of Eidach HaNe'emon Bi'isurim. And then number 3 is a little bit more speculative, but we also had a question of how far the concept of Biyada extends. The classic case of Biyada that we saw was Hafreshas Truma. This is source 3, point 3. Hafreshas Truma, right? Separating truma is considered biyado, because that's something that you really can very easily do.
But Tosos, that we saw last week, says even something more remote, like hiring someone to do a shechita, or learning all of Hilchos Shechita is included. Tosos said, why do we believe a woman to do shechita? Tosos said, it's biyada to, she doesn't know Hilchos Shechita, it's biyada to either hire someone or to open up a Shulchan Aruch in Yeradeya and to learn all of Hilchos Shechita. Now, is that really biyada? How closely biyadcha does something need to be in order to grant you that ne'emanos? Now, it's an interesting question, right? Does it really need to be biyadcha or even a remote possibility? Would that be sufficient as well? So I think it might be contingent on this analysis too. I'd say that the more you view biyadcha, this is my own opinion, and this is not mukhrach, you could take this in different directions, but to me, intuitively it appears that the more biyado is its own form of ne'emanos, it needs to really be biyadcha. You can't have this just remote possibility that you're going to hire somebody to do it for some expensive fee, or you're going to learn all of Hilchos Shechita and that's considered biyadcha. It's just not realistic. It's not really what you're doing. If the whole idea of biyado is to remove the cheskas iser, like Eli was suggesting before, that it means that the cheskas iser is not truly entrenched, then perhaps what we're saying is, as long as there is some avenue, some somewhat reasonable avenue, to make sure that there's no iser here, then the iser is not as entrenched as we think it is. If there's some avenue to create heter, even if it's not something that you could do immediately on the spot, then that's not really eschazek isura. It's not rooted in the halachic realities of the universe that this is usser. It might be difficult for you. You might have to go out of your way to try to create heter here, but it's not really fundamentally usser. Again, in terms of its, if you wanted to use Soloveitchik-like terms, in terms of its ontological definition, you wouldn't say that it's fundamentally rooted in isser. There's a way, there's an avenue towards heter. And therefore, even if it's more remote, we might say biyadcha as well. So the issues that are in play in Tosos may all hinge on that question of what is the nature of biyado? Is it a restoration of Eidachan and Bisurin or an outside form of Ne'emanos? And that was the analysis that we engaged in last week. That was our entry point to the sugya. Tonight, I want to look more narrowly at Eidachan Ne'eman Bisurin itself. And we'll cover as much as we can tonight. We'll pick up Bez Hashem, like I said, in 2 weeks. Next week, we won't have Shir, but we'll pick up then. And here I want to talk about ordinary cases of Eidecha Ne'eman B'Yisurim, and then at a certain point, hopefully, we'll circle back to this whole discussion that we had about Biyada. And I want to start here, actually. I made an executive decision to actually start with source number 5. We'll work our way back to sources 1, 2, 3, and 4, fret not. But when going over the sources, I think number 5 is actually the best starting point for us. Context. Source number 5 is going to present us with the machlokas between the Ketzos and the Nesivos. This is our first machlokas between the Ketzos and the Nesivos that we're seeing in this year. Bezuz Hashem should only be the first of many. The Ketzos and the Nesivos are two pillars of contemporary Torah learning. They were Gedolei Achronim in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. The Ketzos was written by Rav Aryeh Leib Heller, who was a descendant of the Tosfos Yontif and one of the Gedolim in Europe during that period. The Nesivos was written by Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum, and they became classic Baalei Plugta. When you learn Shas, there are certain classic disputants that really define our Torah learning. The classic example, of course, is Abaye V'Rava. That's so entrenched in our Mesorah that we often call Gemara learning Havayos to Abaye V'Rava, right? So that's one classic example. But there are many others that have occurred throughout history. And one, certainly in the modern era, that goes in the classic annals of Baalei Plugta in the history of Klal Yisrael, is the Ketzos and the Nesivos. They frequently dispute issues in their commentary. They're both respective commentaries on Choshen Mishpat, on the section of Shulchan Aruch pertaining to interpersonal monetary law. That's why we haven't seen it so far. When you learn Masechah Shviyos, you're definitely not seeing so many Ketzos and Nesivos. And even in Gittin you see it more, but Gittin is also a Nashim Masechta. If you ever learn, if we get to a Nezikin Masechta at some point, then we'll certainly do more Ketzos and Nesivos. But here we do have a dispute between the Ketzos and the Nesivos pertaining to Eidecha Ne'eman B'Yisurim. Mind you, the principle of Eidecha Ne'eman B'Yisurim, the concept, was a dear concept to them both. I mean, Eidos is, as I noted at the outset of the sugya, a very fundamental principle. One of the Ketzos' other major svarim was the Shev Shmaitza, and the essays in the Shev Shmaitza are devoted to very fundamental issues in Shas, including the principle of Eidecha Ne'eman B'Yisurim. So this was an important principle. It's an important principle in Shas, and it was an important principle to, of course, these Gedolei Achronim as well. And we have a machlokas recorded in source number 5 between the Ketzos and the Nesivos. We're actually going to see it quoted by the Nesivos. We're not going to see the Ketzos inside, but he quotes the Ketzos faithfully here. V'ayin b'sefer Ketzos HaChoshen. He says, take a look at the Ketzos. Shekosav, he wrote, The Edim Sheheidu Shenisnaseich Yenov Shal Reuven V'Huzmu. Let's say you have Edim that testify that Reuven's wine is not kosher. Why? They saw a Nachri come, and they took the wine, and they poured a libation to their pagan god. And therefore, now this Yayin is Yayin Nesach, and it is not kosher. Now, testifying that wine is not kosher is what we would call... Is it? Well, no, it's Nikar. I mean, it was kosher, now it's not kosher. But no, for our purposes, it's called... It's Isurim. It's not as Chazek Isura, because it didn't have a definite entrenched status of Isur. It's called the category of Isurin. In other words, they're not testifying that he owes them money. They're not testifying that he has a Chi of Malkus. They're not testifying that he has a Chi of Misa. They're testifying that something is not kosher. That is Isurin, where ordinarily the principle of Eid Echa Neman be Isurim would apply. So here you happen to have two Eidim, and they come and they testify that the wine is Pasul. And what happens? There is Hazama. What is Hazama? So Hazama is a principle that is mentioned in the Torah. It's outlined famously at the beginning of Maseches Makos, whereby the two witnesses come and say, oh, the moment that you saw that Nachri, you claim to have seen, that Nachri pouring out the wine, doing his pagan libation, you were actually with us in a totally different country, in a totally different place, at the time that you claim to have testified. And what is the ordinary punishment for Hazama? Kasher Hazama, and we do to them what they intended to do to somebody else. So what happens if there is Hazama in the area of Isurin? Ordinarily, Hazama is in the area of, let's say, Mamanus, or alternately, Nefashos, right? They try to punish somebody they try to extract money from someone. They try to claim that somebody's Chayim Malkus. Here, it's in the realm of Isurin. What happens? Says the Ketos, Techayavin Lashalei Mika Asher Zama. Because they're obligated to pay. They tried to cost Reuven this money. So, regular rules of Hazama apply according to the Ketos. Second line, Maybe Rai, Misan Hendri Perak Yod, Beploni Rava Shor Shaploni Vuhuzmu, Techayavin Lashalem, Demei Shor Labailim. He gives an example from an instance where somebody tries to claim that someone else's ox is gored somebody else's, and there's Hazama, so they have to compensate him for the money that he would have lost on his own ox. In other words, they try to incur a monetary loss to somebody else, they have to pay in turn for the loss they tried to incur. But now the Nesivus disagrees. Bold of source number 5. I don't think you can actually compare a case of Isurim, a case where you testify that the wine is not kosher, to a case of a Shorsha Nagach, where you're testifying about mumminous matters pertaining to the ox that gored another. Why? Kasher Zamam only applies when you require Eidos in Beistin itself. You go in Harigas Shor, like killing an ox, where you need to testify in Beistin. I will be Isurin when it comes to matters of Isur, our category, Edecha Neman be Isurin, in that category, Afilu b'makom detzarech shnei Edim. Even in a case where you require two Edim, what would be a case where you require two Edim by Isurin? Like we said, what's the case where you require two? Tvar Erva, or the alternate formulation of the Gemara? It's Chazak Isura, right? Even in those instances, Mikol Makom Lo Tzarech Hagada BeBeistin. Nonetheless, they don't need to actually show up in Beistin. K'moshek Asavdi Le'el B'Simen Chavches, B'Sefer Chavaz Das, etc. They don't need to actually come into Beistin. If you look in source number 4, that's where he explicates that. He says, in an instance where you have a Davrish of Erva, and it's Isurin, or it's Chazak Isura, he says, we could just read it from the bold, or let's look 3 words before the bold. To after be'in on shnayim, even though you need 2 witnesses, we call makom sagi k'shemeidin chutz lebeistin. Says the Nesivos, in matters of Isurin, even when you need 2, they can testify outside of beistin. To davka be'otzos mamon dechsevim lo yagid be'in on beistin. Specifically by extracting money. That's where the Torah explicates that you need to do it in the context of a beistin. Aval be'isurin, but when it comes to isur, testifying that something is kosher, something that's not kosher, the wine can be drank, the wine cannot be drunk, even in a place where you require 2, we call makom mahani edos chutz lebeistin. Nonetheless, edos works outside of beistin. So we have machlokes between the Ketzos and the Nesivos. The Ketzos says, and we'll try to break this down as best we can. The Ketzos says, if 2 witnesses testify that somebody else's wine is not kosher, and they were proven to be edim zomimin, they pay. Like they tried to incur monetary loss to somebody else, they pay. And that's very intuitive, right? That's the general rule of Hazama. The Nesiva says no. Why? Because Hazama only applies to Eidos that needs to be delivered in Beis Din. And this Eidos, because it's Isurin, does not need to be delivered in Beis Din.
So where is okay. Hazama coming?
What do you mean, where's Hazama coming?
Where are these two witnesses? The two witnesses who say that the guys weren't there.
Oh, they're presumably coming into Beis Din. In other words,
so
but
doesn't it become a Dine Mamanos case?
The Nesivus is saying that as long as it didn't need to be in Beis Din. In other words, it could have been that they did testify in Beis Din. As long as they didn't have to be in Beis Din, it's not a character of Eidos that's subject to Hazam.
Then how do you get? What are you compensating that? You're giving the guy the money for the wine, or replacing the wine.
Ksos is claiming that they have to give the money to replace the wine. But then Steve is saying they don't have to give that
but
money.
Is it because it becomes a Mamanov case? Or is he saying...
You're asking about the Ksos' logic?
Yeah.
The Ksos' logic is presumably that Hazama applies across the board. And as long as there's Eidos, it's subject to Hazama. As a matter of fact, one of the general requirements of Eidos is that it needs to be Nitan LaHazama. If Eidos is not Nitan, Eidos Yata Yachol HaZima is rejected in Beis Din. So the Ksos, I think, has the more intuitive view here. He's saying that just like any Eidos is subject to HaZama, this is subject to HaZama as well. The Nesivos is arguing that, again, because it does not need to be delivered in Beis Din, and HaZama is only subject to Eidos that needs to be delivered in Beis Din, there's no HaZama in this case. That is the Nesivos. Now, the question that I pose to you is, what exactly is the machlokus between the Ksos and the Nesivos? What exactly does it hinge upon conceptually? What is the nature of this machlokus between the Ksos and the Nesivos? And I'll say at the outset, this relates to a broader methodological point that we've brought up many, many times. There are at least two ways to understand the machlokus between the Ksos and the Nesivos. When you break it down, again, using just standard methodology, both in Gemara learning and in general, if you understand the arguments in the Nesivos, there are at least two ways that one can break down this machlokas between the Ksos and the Nesivos. I ask you what they are.
Well, if the Edom don't actually have to be there in the first place, then I think the Nesivos is saying that this whole concept is neutralizing the Edom. So if they're not there, it won't work because there's nothing to neutralize.
What if they are there? He's saying that was Robbie's point before. They are there, but they just don't need to be there. He's saying that's enough to remove Hazama. In theory, they could have delivered this Eidos outside of Beis Din. I'll direct your thinking for a moment. Bear in mind the argument of the Nesivos. Think about what the argument of the Nesivos is, and through the argument of the Nesivos, we can deconstruct it to create two potential ways of understanding the Machlokas. The Nesivos argued that Eidos in the realm of Nisurin does not need to be delivered in Beis Din, and Eidos that does not need to be delivered in Beis Din is not subject to Hazama. Therefore, there's no Hazama on Reuven's barrel of wine. That's the Nesivos' argument.
Are they really testifying that it's coming
to Nesivos?
Creating
an Isser?
Sorry?
Are they really testifying, or they're just creating an Isser versus...
Okay,
Eidos.
So good. So hold that thought. We'll get back to that. Robbie, what were you saying?
So saying it has to be in Beis Din.
Okay, one option, or...
It's in their own hand whether or not they went to Beis Din. They caused the whole issue.
But again, this goes back to the point that Zach and Robbie were raising before. Yudi, even if they did choose to go to Beis Din, then Nesivos' point is, because they didn't have to...
So it's Biyadcha, it's in their...
That's interesting. But again, Biyadcha is a form of Ne'emanos. It's not an out clause for Hazama, right? You know, any instance of Hazama is Biyado. It was Biyadcha not to lie about somebody else, right? That doesn't get you out of Hazama. That's really clever, you know, if you go to Beis Din and say, oh, it was Biyadi not to lie against somebody else.
But there has to be some form of, even though there's no Hazama, there has to be some form of penalty for somebody to come forward.
Oh, it's still bad to lie. Don't get me wrong. I mean, in other words, that's, yeah.
More than that.
It's still a big Avera. It's, the relationship between Hazama and Eidos Sheker in terms of Malkus is a very interesting question. In other words, Eidos Sheker is just a general Isser, right? So when do you receive Malkus as opposed to Hazama? And there could be lots of instances of Eidos Sheker that doesn't have the particular forms of Hazama. So yeah, so you might be subject to other penalties or punishments, but it would not be Hazama. Ellie, what were you going to say?
If it happens outside of Beis Din, maybe it's not considered Eidos.
Okay, so again, so good, but I want to hold off on that. You're correct, but just let's break it down more, like again, just methodologically first before we jump to that.
Is it a matter of giving
That's good too, but again, but not, but also not. Right, right, no, no, no. But you're getting too fancy. You're getting too fancy. All right, what were you going to say?
Maybe the concept of Hazama itself.
Namely,
Hazama, if you're in front of Beis Din, according to the Tzos, then it can be Hazama. Whether it needs to be in Beis Din or not.
Okay.
But the Nesivos would argue with
that. Excellent. Okay, good. So if we combine Rabbi and Ari's points, we have two methods of breaking this down. And again, I'm doing this more because, like I said, we try to do methodology in the Shir in addition to just learning. The Nesivos made the following argument. And again, I'll say it as I said it before. Premise number one, or I guess I'll add details here. Premise number one, Eidos in the realm of Isurim does not need to be delivered in Beis Din. Premise number two, Hazama does not apply to Eidos that need not be delivered in Beis Din, right? And therefore, he's putter in this case. Now, when you break it down that way, and you understand that the argument hinges on two premises, you can dispute either of those two premises. Premise one was that Eidos in the realm of Isurim does not need to be delivered in Beis Din. Does the Ksos agree with that? It's not a halakha l'moshe misinai. The Ksos may not agree with that. Or alternately, that was Rabbi's point. Maybe the Ksos thinks that you do need to deliver the Eidos in Beis Din. Point number two, let's grant that first premise. Let's say that you don't need to deliver it in Beis Din. The Nesivos then asserted that Hazama does not apply to Eidos that doesn't need to be delivered in Beis Din. Does the Ksos need to agree with that? He may not agree with that either. He may agree with the implicit assumption that many of you were making, that even if you need not delivered in Beis Din, if you do show up in Beis Din, you've exposed yourself to the risks of Hazama. If you decided to lie in Beis Din, that was a bad, poor choice, and now you are subject to the process of Hazama. So when you just, again, break down the Nesivos' legal argument and you think about how he constructs it, you immediately realize that there are two ways that the Ksos can argue. If there are two premises, there are two props, two assumptions that the argument rests upon, if you knock out either one, then you can argue. Now, the one that Ari pointed out, the question of the nature of Hazama, is it only if it needs to be in Beis Din, or even if the Eidos just happens to be in Beis Din, is a very interesting question, but more interesting if we were learning the first paragraph of Maseches Makos, which we're not learning right now, right? So let's leave that question aside. The question that Rabbi was raising as to whether Eidos be'isurim needs to be in Beis Din could be a very, very fundamental question for us. And the question could hinge on some of the points that Steve, and I forgot who else, that maybe Ellie was raising a moment ago. What is Eid Echad Ne'eman be'isurim? We have this principle that in the realm of Isurim, in this realm, an Eid Echad is believed. And we use the term Eid. But we also know that the Torah, in several instances, almost doesn't have the word Eid. It has the word Eidim, right? We almost always require two Eidim. So what is this idea of Eid Echad Ne'eman be'isurim? And conceptually, we can view it in one of two ways. One option is to say that this realm of halacha operates differently from other realms of halacha. We have a principle of Eidos in general, and we have general rules of Eidos. But the rules of Eidos exist differently in different fields that Beis Din adjudicates over. There's one area called Dinei Mamonos. That's where we have the original pasuk of Al-Pishnayim Eidim. Al-Pishnei Eidim, there are two psukim in the Torah. But that's where the original context of two Eidim. That's Mamonos. And that's where the rules of Eidos that we know operate and apply. Those are extrapolated or expounded to Erva, because we have a Gzera Shava of Davar Mimamun. So fine, in some areas of Halacha, we do have this concept of Eidos. But in other areas, namely the area of Isurim, the rules of Eidos operate differently in those realms. And there, you only require one Eid. That's one possibility. The alternative is, Eidos is defined by two Eidim. And even the moniker that we use, Eid Echad Ne'eman be'isurim, is almost a misnomer. It's not really Eid Echad. What should the emphasis be? Not on the word Eid Echad, but rather on the word Ne'eman. It's a form of Ne'emanos. Like we were saying before, there are lots of forms of Ne'emanos that exist outside the realm of Eidos, and it could be that we believe him, but the rules of Eidos don't really apply. One nafkamina of this question could be whether or not you need to show up in Beis Din. According to the Nesivos, yeah, you are an aid. We changed the rules of Eidos, right? We believe a single aid in this instance, but certainly in cases of Eschazik Isura at least, you need to actually show up in Beis Din in order for that Eidos to be formalized. And once you do show up in Beis Din, you need to show up in Beis Din in order to have that Eidos formalized. And once the Eidos is formalized, the rules of Eidos will apply. By contrast, the Nesivos argues that, no, this is not a real form of Eidos, it's just a form of Ne'emanos. And even if they did happen to show up in Beis Din, you would never have the principle of Hazama apply, because it is an entirely different form of Eidos. And we could raise the same question about other forms of, other rules of Eidos. Take a look at source number 6. Now here we have the Avnei Miluah. This source is actually going to pose something of a problem for my analysis, because the Avnei Miluim was written by the same author as the Ketzos. His commentary, Ari Leib Heller's commentary on Choshen Mishpat was called the Ketzos HaChoshen. His commentary on Evna Ezer was called Avnei Miluim. What about the question of aid me pi aid? In general, we have a principle within Eidos that aid me pi aid does not work. You can't. There's no hearsay, right? That's what we would call it in the context of a secular legal context. You can't tell me that you heard it from somebody who saw it themselves or who heard it from someone else. What about by eid echon ema bisurin? Can we have aid me pi aid? If you look at the Tzos and source number 6, he says, just to save time, let's look at the very end. He says, "V'mkein vada dihu adin aid me pi aid ne'eman bo tevechol isurin to aid echon ne'eman." Aid me pi aid ne'eman. He asserts that in any realm of aid echon ema bisurim, aid me pi aid is acceptable as well. Is that obvious? Not at all obvious. We could have said that, no, this is eidos, right? We have this one difference whereby we don't require two eidim, we require one aid, but the rules of eidos apply as they do in other areas. So don't tell me that aid me pi aid works. The Avnei Miluim here asserts that, look, once one person is ne'eman, you could also testify on the basis of hearsay. The whole rules of eidos operate totally differently within aid echon ema bisurim. Now, an intuitive explanation for that would be that it's not mipi eidos at all. What is it? It is ne'emanus. So the whole rule that disqualifies aid mipi aid is a rule in the category of eidos. But aid echon ema bisurim is operating in a different realm. Now, you'll note that that would create tension within the Ketzos himself, because in a moment ago, I was saying the Ketzos holds that it is a real form of eidos, whereas here he's not. So there are ways to kind of navigate that tension within a single shita, which I really don't want to get into the weeds right now. We could talk about it a little more next week, but we're almost done now. But one could have claimed that, yes, it is a form of eidos, but once we've acknowledged that some of the rules of eidos are different, perhaps some of the other rules of eidos are different too. Once we've allowed one aid, that defies the general rule of eidos. Perhaps other rules like aid me pi aid would be different as well.
But
so we'll get to that. We didn't get to that, but if you look in sources number 1, 2, and 3, that's going to be the question of aid echon ema bisurim by psulei eidos. Before we get to that, let's talk about other principles of eidos. There's another principle of eidos called kivon shehiged shuvei nechozer u'magid. Anybody familiar with that principle? Kivon shehiged shuvei nechozer u'magid means, effectively, no backsies. You can't, once you testify in Beis Din, you can't just go back and all of a sudden say, oh, the whole thing was made up, and I didn't really mean it, and now I'm going to testify, you know, deeply contrary to what I testified before. There are certain circumstances where perhaps it can be justified. You have some kind of amasla, where you have some kind of justification for why you said something that was counter to the truth beforehand, and now you have a good, reasonable justification for why you're withdrawing your original testimony and offering something else. But ordinarily speaking, kivon shehiged shuvei nechozer u'magid dictates that you can't withdraw what you said before and offer new testimony. Does kivon shehiged shuvei nechozer u'magid apply to aid echon ema bisurim? Does it apply or does it not? So perhaps, unsurprisingly, it is a discussion in the Achronim. In the Rav Chaim in Stencil, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who of course is the father of brisker learning, is the father of the conceptual learning that pretty much all Klal Yisrael engages in nowadays. He wrote a sefer on the Rambam. Even the sefer that he wrote was not published during his lifetime. He wrote essays on the Rambam that were published by his children posthumously. But he didn't really write much. He devoted most of his life to teaching, not to writing. So they have what they call the Rav Chaim in Stencil, which is basically notes that different Talmidim took on his shiurim that were appended to the daf of the Gemara. So he has a whole discussion of whether kivon shehiged shuvei nechozer u'magid, does that apply to aid echon ema bisurim? Does it operate within the rules of standard eidos, or does it not? So here we have this central question, and again, we're going to explore this question further, but as Hashem, in our next year, what is aid echon ema bisurim generally? Is it a form of eidos that exists within the realm of isur, even though you don't have two eidim? Is it something totally separate? Is it a form of ne'emanos? And what are the major ramifications of that? Again, Be'ezra Hashem, we will continue to explore.
All right.